Last week I was speaking about a time in the life of David when things were fairly settled and stable. And those are not the kind of days that we are living in Northern Ireland, in the United Kingdom, or in the European Union. We are in days when it seems like each day we really don't know what this day is going to bring forth. Yesterday we were wondering how things were going to work out at Westminster in regard to Brexit, and tomorrow we're awaiting what is going to happen at Stormont. Will our marriage law be redefined in Northern Ireland? Will abortion be decriminalised in Northern Ireland? Or will our assembly reconvene after more than 1,000 days of not meeting as an assembly? Well, today I want to remind you of one of the times in the history of God's people in the Old Testament when things really must have looked pretty grim. At the time of the division of the kingdom following the death of Solomon. And in thinking about, just in general, what's happening there in 1 Kings chapter 12, I want to speak about the chaos that we see and then about the God we can't see. First of all, the chaos we see. Things had changed greatly for the better for God's people. What a difference there was between that time of cruel, cruel bondage in the days of Moses in the land of Egypt and on the other hand, the prosperous and peaceful times that God's people knew in the days of Solomon. Days in which people could enjoy living in their own land, in their own homes, and being the envy of the nations around them. But all of that comes crashing down in a very short period of time. So soon after the death of Solomon, we come to this terrible event of the division of the kingdom. And in 1 Kings 12, we read about how the foolishness of Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, it leads to the division of the kingdom. And Rehoboam is left with just part of the nation for himself. There is the tribe of Judah. And within the territory of Judah was the tribe of Simeon, and part of Benjamin seems to have been allied to Judah. But the rest of the nation was cut off, and the 10 northern tribes under the leadership of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, became a separate nation. And instead of being one nation under God, it became two nations opposed to each other. Two nations that would have been at war with each other, but for the restraining hand of God. These were awful events in the experience of God's people. Nobody wanted these things to be happening. But they did happen. And at the end of 1 Kings chapter 12, we see Jeroboam, the leader of the northern kingdom of Israel, trying to make sure that things stay this way. He wants to hold on to power. He's afraid of his people because they'll be going south to worship at Jerusalem. He's afraid that their allegiance would turn to Rehoboam, the king of Judah. And so we're told about how he sets up two golden calves, one in Bethel, one in Dan. And he says to the people in verse 28, "It's too much for you to go up to Jerusalem. Here are your gods, O Israel, which brought you up from the land of Egypt." And in doing that, Jeroboam was encouraging and he was leading the people of Israel into sin. He was like a shepherd leading his sheep in utterly the wrong direction. And the actions of Jeroboam shaped the whole future of the northern kingdom of Israel. The other kings that follow on after Jeroboam, again and again we read in the scriptures how they walked in the ways of Jeroboam, son of Nebat. If you turned over to, for example, to 2 Kings chapter 13, where we're told about one of the kings of Israel, many years after Jeroboam, a king called Jehoahaz, and he becomes king and he reigns for 17 years, we're told. What kind of king was he? 2 Kings 13, verse 2. And he did evil in the sight of the Lord and followed the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who had made Israel sin. He did not depart from them. And that was true of every single king of the northern kingdom of Israel. All of them followed in the ways of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. And when we come in 2 Kings to chapter 17 and the end of the northern kingdom, when they're taken off into captivity in Assyria, and this is many, many years later, but Jeroboam is still being blamed for all of this. 2 Kings 17, verses 22 and 23. For the children of Israel walked in all the sins of Jeroboam, which he did. They did not depart from them until the Lord removed Israel out of his sight, as he had said by all his servants, the prophets. So Israel was carried away from their own land to Assyria, as it is to this day. It was a terrible thing when the kingdom was divided. It was bad news for everybody among God's people. That's what Jeroboam was doing in the north. But in the south, where Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, is the king over Judah, things really weren't much better at all. In his reign, we're told in 1 Kings 14, verse 22, it says, "Now Judah did evil in the sight of the Lord, and they provoked him to jealousy with their sins which they committed, more than all their fathers had done." And verse 24, there in that same chapter, it says, "And there were also perverted persons in the land. They did according to all the abominations of the nations which the Lord had cast out before the children of Israel." So that's the way it was in Judah. That's the way it was in Israel. Those great days under David and Solomon, suddenly it was all changed. The nation was divided. There was godlessness in the south. There was idolatry in the north. Everything changed. And it must have seemed that it was so, so quick that it was all transformed. Whichever side of the border you were on in those days, it must have seemed like these were grim times in which to live. For godly people, seeing the things that their kings were doing, seeing the direction that they were leading the people in, it must have broken the hearts of God's people. The things that they had known in the days of David, 40-year reign of David, 40-year reign of Solomon, the things that they had come to rejoice in and delight in, those things were gone. And now there were wicked men on the throne, whether it was the northern kingdom of Israel or the southern kingdom of Judah. Everything was on the slide. Things were going from bad to worse again. And this is the way it was in these times. And I wonder, do we not feel something of the same at this stage in our history? We live on an island divided between two nations. In the southern part of our island, we have a Taoiseach in Leo Varadkar, who is in an openly homosexual relationship, a man who has promoted profound changes for the worse to the laws in the Republic of Ireland on marriage and abortion. And in the northern part of our island, we have an openly adulterous Prime Minister in Boris Johnson. We have a Parliament that has sought to impose upon Northern Ireland its God-defying laws, redefining marriage and decriminalising abortion. We have every reason to be afraid that the future is very different from what we have known, some of us, all our lives. And what will the future hold for nations that seem to be provoking God at every turn? What will it profit a nation, whatever it gains, if it loses its own soul? What dark days these were, in the days of Rehoboam and Jeroboam, when the kingdom was divided. It must have seemed as if everything had gone out of control. It must have seemed as if all was lost, as if evil was winning the day wherever you looked. Where could you go to find a place where you could feel at home? It must have seemed like a lost cause for the people who loved the Lord and who loved his ways. And you'll find that on many occasions in the history that we have in the Scriptures. Sometimes things look very, very bleak. And at the moment, in our land, we may fear that even if we get the least worst outcome in all of these things, things are going to be pretty grim. So as we think of the days of the division of the kingdom, first of all, there is the chaos that we see. But then, in the second place, there is the God that we can't see. What hope was there for God's people in these post-Solomon days? Those must have been days of rejoicing for those who wanted freedom to practice their false religion, freedom to practice their idolatry and their sexual perversion. They would have felt that their time had come. In their day, they would have seen themselves as being the progressives. And they would have seen David and Solomon as men who were stuck in the past. And that's what liberal politicians these days talk about. They talk about being progressive. And they talk about being on the right side of history. Well, if you've got cancer and you're told that it's progressing, that's bad news. What people talk about as progress is progress in the wrong direction. And people talk about being on the right side of history. Well, history isn't finished yet. And history will finish when the king of history returns. And it's being on his side, that's what counts. What hope was there for people who lived in the days of Rehoboam and Jeroboam? What hope was there for them? They wanted to hold to God's ways. They wanted to hold to the pure worship of God and to hold to the laws of God. Well, there was no hope in looking to the king in the north. There was no hope in looking to the king in the south. Those men were committed to doing their thing, not doing God's thing. And yet there was hope in those days. And in this very dark chapter, there are two little glimmers of light that shine through the black curtain that hangs over everything. First one is in verse 15. It says, the king did not listen to the people, for the turn of events was from the Lord, that he might fulfill his word, which the Lord had spoken by Ahijah the Shilonite to Jeroboam the son of Nebat. Little glimmer of light there. The turn of events was from the Lord. And there's also one in verse 24. We're told how Shemaiah the prophet brings a message to King Rehoboam. Thus says the Lord, you shall not go up nor fight against your brethren, the children of Israel. Let every man return to his house, for this thing is from me. Therefore, they obeyed the word of the Lord and turned back according to the word of the Lord. And there's two little lines of encouragement there in those two verses. First of all, from verse 15, there is the encouragement that events are from the Lord. The king, we're told, didn't listen to the people, for the turn of events was from the Lord. Here is a stubborn king, and he insists on having his way, his own way. Now, his way was going to result in the division of the kingdom, but we're told that this turn of events was from the Lord. And so we have to see, look below the surface. And this wasn't just a foolish king ruining the good work of God. This wasn't a case of God being powerless to do anything about what this king had his heart set upon. No, we're told this turn of events was from the Lord. The division of the kingdom was from the Lord. For God's good reasons, God had determined that this is the way it would be. The kingdom would be divided. And that looked as if that was weakening the cause of God. But God often does things through weakness rather than through strength. And in every age, God can use the stubborn and foolish actions of leaders in authority to bring about what God has planned. And over all the things that have changed in our world, even in the last week, over all of them, it can be written, this turn of events was from the Lord. And if God spares us to be here next Lord's Day, we'll be able to look back upon whatever happens at Stormont tomorrow and other things, and we'll be able to say that this turn of events also was from the Lord. Whatever it is, it will be from the Lord. If God has hard times and sad times ahead for us in this country, it will not be because God was powerless to stop such things. Any turn of events that comes upon us will be from the Lord. And we need to believe that with all our hearts. The turn of events was from the Lord. That's the first encouragement, that events are from the Lord. The second encouragement is that rulers are under God's control. We find that this very same King Rehoboam, who didn't listen to anybody that was giving him good advice in verse 15, he did listen in verse 24. He did listen when he was told that he was not to go and fight against the northern kingdom of Israel. He wanted to do that. He wanted to go and put them in their place. His heart was set upon going to war against Jeroboam. But he didn't do it, because God sent his prophet And the prophet said, God says you're not to do this. And amazingly, Rehoboam actually listened and obeyed. God said, this thing is from me. This division is from me. You're not to go and fight against them. This thing is from me, God says. And Rehoboam obeyed the word of the Lord. And that action of his is an illustration of what we're taught in Proverbs 21, verse 1. The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. Like the rivers of water, he turns it wherever he wishes. God turned the heart of Rehoboam in his foolishness. It led to the division of the kingdom. But God stopped him from fighting against the Israelites. And in this matter, Rehoboam did not what Rehoboam wanted, but he did what God wanted, what God commanded. Rehoboam doesn't look like a man who would do the right thing, but he did. I wonder, can you think of anybody in our day that don't look as if they're people who would do the right thing? But God could make them do the right thing. And we need to believe always in life that our sovereign Lord is able to move those who are in authority to do things that they do not want to do. I've been told by many, many people in recent times, I've heard it from political commentators, I've heard it from politicians that I've spoken to, that there is no hope of the Northern Ireland Assembly going back on Monday, the 21st of October. That's what everybody is saying. There might be people there, but the Assembly will not reconvene as an Assembly. Well, that might be absolutely right. That might be what will happen tomorrow. There may be people there, but they'll not do anything that will make any difference. That might be the case. I'm not saying that I know that that won't be the case. But what I'm saying is that my reading of the Bible leads me to believe that with God, all things are possible. And the Lord could forcefully bring upon Michelle O'Neill of Sinn Féin the weight of all those people who have been contacting her and urging her to prevent the abortion law being changed. God could cause her to not be able to sleep tonight, and he could bring into her mind thoughts of all those children in the future who aren't going to be in this country because of what she's saying she's not going to do tomorrow. God could do that. God could convince her that here's an opportunity to be seen as a hero. And she could take the credit. Take the credit for stopping the threatened abortion laws. God could scare her with the thought that this could be a real vote loser. There's nothing that scares politicians more than the fear of losing votes, losing power. Or God could cause her to fear that maybe this will allow John O'Dowd to sneak in and take my authority away from me. God can work in all sorts of ways. I don't know that he will, but I believe that he could. If I can't believe in a God who can't move the hearts of politicians today, well, then I don't believe in the God of the Scriptures. When the Lord says, this thing is from me, well, then that thing will stand. Who would have expected? Who would have thought that Rehoboam, this headstrong, quick to speak, slow to listen ruler of his day, would have listened to God? But he did. So let us keep on praying that God will work mightily. And if God has so decreed that that's not what he's going to do, well then, as we go into the whole new situation that we'll face with a different law on marriage and a different law on abortion, we have to go forward believing that this turn of events was from the Lord. Amen.